Ryan, thank you for coming on. Obviously, had a few people saying, get Ryan on, we want to hear his story and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, cool, I can get him on, but I don't want to talk about all the so-called glory, because we all make things sound a lot better than they actually are. Underline from your journey from agency to freelancer, there's obviously been pain points along the way, and still are massive gaps and pain points and struggles and scaling. So going to go right back to the start of your journey, when I first met you, which was probably, we started speaking obviously when you said you saw me at Brighton, and you messaged me on Facebook, we spoke, and then of all places where I'm right now, you decided to come over to Amsterdam in the January 2020, which is just over 2 years ago. Still in an agency, wasn't really feeling it in an agency. and obviously you came over, you spoke to some of the friends I had and all that kind of stuff. But what was the deciding factor? So that's my version of what I've seen. You know, you came here, you've seen people doing all right, and then it just felt like you just went, fuck this, I'm leaving the agency. I want to do what you guys are doing. But was there something before that kind of triggered that? Or was it that trip to Amsterdam? Like, what made you think, I don't like this agency life, I want to you know, maybe make my own money and start my own business?
I think, Amsterdam was a big, big driver of that. I think before you start making, you know, decent money by yourself, you think it's kind of reserved for a certain type of person. You know, people with like huge amounts of business acumen and potentially experience building their own business. But, you know, hanging around with you guys, you're all down to earth, all humble. You all want to see people be successful. And I was just like, these guys have got it right. You know, nobody's bossing them around. They're here in Amsterdam doing what the fuck they want, and I want a piece of it. So yeah, that was like the catalyst. I was like, I want to be in 2 years, 3 years time like these guys.
So what was it you hated about the agency life? Like, what was it you were struggling with? Like, for me, you know, when I didn't work in an agency, I had my own agency, but prior to that, I didn't ever really work well with bosses and stuff, you know, when I had a real job, and just wanted a bit more freedom. But what was it you hated about the agency life?
Yeah, probably a bit the same of what you said. I didn't get on with the whole mantra of an agency. I didn't get on with the politics. I didn't get on with the authority trips and power trips that some of the managers and some of the internal teams went through. As you know, you get into a big agency, some of these people, despite not kind of being out on their own, doing their own thing, had a, you know, not everybody, just to be clear, had, you know, an ego or a power trip. And agency life is super fast paced. I was balancing like 15 clients, 20 clients at any one time. And you could never really do anything of substance or of value for any client, because you're always just jumping from pillar to post. And it was that never seeing anything through properly that really, over like the period of 2 years, got under my skin. And I was like, I want to see something through and execute it myself.
Interesting look on it. One thing I do want to ask is, like, obviously you've had the you know, years of working in an agency, but when you jumped out into being a freelancer, how different, like, what did you feel like, how you were underskilled in any way, or you know, out your depth or anything like that? Because obviously in an agency, typically you get certain tasks to do, and then you get someone else to do this and someone else to do that. And then when you're on your own, it's really up to you to either do it yourself or find someone who can do it for you, without just basically being able to pop around the corner and talk to the web developer. So how do you feel agency helped you skills-wise before jumping out? Was it good, bad, or were you, you know, did you feel you were underskilled to some degree?
Yeah, I think agency, working in an agency, you get really good at working with clients face-to-face, managing that relationship and being able to kind of upsell things and speak a client's language. And that has transitioned into freelance really, really well, because that's what's allowed me to work with some of the bigger budget clients. But Yeah, massively. When I left the agency, it was, you don't, the thing that became really clear is you don't really know a ton of SEO until you do it yourself or for somebody else directly. Like you said, when you're in an agency, it's a lot of planning, there's a lot of research, there's a lot of kind of strategizing, but then you hand it off and somebody else goes and delivers on it. So yeah, when I left, I was like, not great at link building, not super confident in some of my other areas of SEO, mainly link related. But you soon realize that the agency life has kind of sheltered you a little bit and hidden you away from the stuff that actually works really well. And that's, you know, one of the things that you have helped me uncover over the last couple of years.
Interesting. So obviously you've done it, you got out, and I can't remember, when was it, maybe like the September 2020 when you finally left or something like that?
Yeah, so I had notice went in May and I had a 3 months notice period where they tried to, like, you know, it got cut short. but I actually launched the business in September. Yeah.
So officially out by September, which is great. Now, obviously you had a period of time where we met in Amsterdam, you went away, thought about things and decided to hand your notice in the May. At what point did you start seeking clients? Because you always knew you were leaving, but at what point, like, you didn't just rock up in September and then come all these clients? Like, what was the conversations? Did you have some clients on the side? Or how did it work? Because other people watching this are going to be in an agency going, I fancy being a freelancer, but it's about, when is it time to jump? And when can you afford to jump? Because you're jumping from a monthly salary into, shit, I don't know when I'm getting paid next. So how did you bridge that kind of gap, or how did it work?
I had very small, like, I thought I was a web designer at one point. I took on web build clients whilst I was at the agency, just, you know, 700 quid, £1,000 for building an entire website. And it was the same, to be honest, when I handed my notice in, I was kind of on the play of, I'll use these as an intro to try and get SEO out of it. And it didn't really work out that way because I wasn't a fantastic web developer. But come September, I kind of had the knowledge of, okay, so I know how to get these introductions. I know how to find these types of people. And as of September, I was just like, I know they all pretty much exist on LinkedIn. So I was just like, I have no recurring revenue coming in. These are where all of my potential clients are. I'm just going to, from September onwards, just go super hard at making my presence known as much as it can. And yeah, it was scary, dude. I went from, like, you know, a reasonable salary to pretty much zero in a 3 month period.
I love the part where you say, I thought I was a web designer. I think I've thought that at one point as well.
Hold on, just changing my camera back. There you go.
Jeez, too bright now,
man. Open. Look how pasty I am.
but everyone thought they were a web designer, but I think this is where it gets challenging. You know, you're there in September, no money, salary's gone, and you decided to choose LinkedIn as a platform, which you still do reasonably well from. And I know guys like Andreas and stuff sitting on the side there are always, you know, thinking that, you know, how do we get that flow of leads coming in? And I think any freelancer out there would love to hear more about LinkedIn. So what have you found? Obviously, we all know LinkedIn's a platform and we know you post frequently, you get massive engagement. You've got to be consistent with it. But like, how does that turn into leads? Like, what worked really well for you? What type of content really worked well for you?
Mm-hmm. The type of content that works well, and it has always worked well, is I basically just told people how to do it. Like, I told them, this is how I built XYZ. This is how I made this amount of money with this client. And here is basically everything we did in simple terms. And it provoked one of two responses. One, I would get other SEOs messaging me saying, can you give me more detail about this so I can go and do it? Or I would get like an e-com manager or a digital marketing manager saying, look, we don't have the skill set in-house. Could you have a conversation with us? Have a look at if we have any gaps. And that is normally how the conversations would start. I would never ever cold DM or cold email anybody. I would inbound, you know, this is why your e-com store is not making 100K. Here's how you figure that out. By the way, it's probably really hard for you guys to do by yourself. I've done it for the last 10 years. Let's have a conversation type thing.
So not selling, not being pushy, just never advising and stuff like that, which is quite interesting. I'm a believer in the best way to sell is not to sell. Yeah. And believe it or not, like when I'm on stage or on podcasts or whatever, and I regularly say, fuck clients, you know, fuck this, fuck that, the more clients come for me. Like they're like, you know, and it's really weird. And I've always felt that, you know, even when I did do clients, you know, don't sell, then you do not have to be the sleazy salesperson. You know, if you drop enough knowledge or a little bit more than the average Joe, it worked well for me. And it's nice to see that that works obviously very well from your point of view as well. So you're utilizing LinkedIn and you're doing that, like let's say September, and you're making your face known and voice known. When do the leads start coming in? How long does it take for people to start generating leads using that type of strategy?
Well, for me, it took me 30 days to get my first 2K a month client. Mm-hmm. And that was the first client I landed in September was a referral. It was a 750 quid website audit referral. I was like, great, this is going to kind of hold me through the rest of the month. And at the same time, I was still writing LinkedIn posts. I was still like super committed to it. And by the end of September, I had signed my first 6-month agreement with a local web design company. So for me, it took 30 days to get my first one. And then by month three, I was doing 10K a month in clients.
10K a month in clients within 3 months, which is obviously very interesting. Now, when we start out, again, certainly when I started out, I didn't have agreements with people. I didn't get anyone to sign contracts. I didn't really, you know, people could sign up and then drop off after 2 weeks, 3 weeks or whatever. So obviously you went in as a freelancer and nailed a 2 grand a month client. Most other people are doing 200 quid a month, 300 quid a month, 500 quid a month, you know, the kind of lower end clients. Did you deliberately go after the kind of 2K minimum type of client or you know, or was that just luck?
I mean, this was probably, again, another benefit of working at the agency. Like I knew realistically what it would take to do certain things and how to kind of substantiate value. So I knew that my knowledge of working with, you know, Lloyds Bank and some of these other big companies would work in my favor. So while some other, you know, freelancers potentially don't have that kind of resume just yet, and they have to kind of build up to these 2K a month retainers, I was in a fortunate position to say, look, I've done it. I've worked with the £1 million a year spend, the 100K a month spend, and I now want to start doing the same level of work, but with smaller, you know, smaller businesses. And I deliberately kept myself away from businesses that would either A, hurt my reputation because I couldn't deliver on the budget, or B, would be always at like in my DM saying, where's this, where's that, what's going on, what's happening? Because smaller budgets normally mean more headaches because you're normally dealing directly with a business owner rather than like a middleman or a middle management. So that's why I kind of steered clear of it, or tried my best to anyway.
I think that's a good point you make. Like, obviously working in the agency has its benefits. You know, you understood the value, potentially understood the you know, what a contract looked like. Whereas I think a lot of us that started out, not, because I've never worked in an agency as such. I never had access to that. I didn't know really what the true value of what I could charge was. And very often undersold myself and undervalued myself to a certain extent. So I think that's a great way to look at it, you know. And I think I've looked at a lot of guys and spoke to a lot of guys, and Marcus Lawrence is one, and I hope he doesn't mind me telling the story. But when I first met him, like, he had like 30 or 40 clients all paying him like 200 quid a month. And I'm like, dude, what the f-? And he thought he was doing really well. But he hadn't networked or hadn't spoke to other SEOs before. And then we were like, dude, that's fucking crazy stuff. he's like, what are you guys, you know, doing, and how do you make money? And then I think when he's seen the different ways to make money and what people were making and charging and all that stuff, he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And massively helped him. So I think, you know, the fortunate thing you've had from the agency is obviously that understanding your value. So you've obviously done your thing, scraped by in the first month or two, let's say, you know, and got to 10k in 3 months. And I know you were always, I want to make 5k, then at 10k and whatever, because obviously we spoke a lot through your whole journey. Yeah. But, you know, from my perspective, you know, you had ambitious plans to make this money, and I know that everyone always wants to scale up the money side of things, but there has to be problems along the way, you know, whether that's going from 10k to 20k or whatever. You know, what were the kind of problems you faced? Because obviously you're doing it all yourself, it's you, and I know Holly would have helped you with bits and bobs, but again, she wasn't an SEO. So what were the kind of scaling problems? What problems did you find, and how did you resolve them? Just going from, let's say, 5k to 10k, what were the kind of head fucks or you know, things that were really getting stressed out about, and how did you resolve those?
Yeah, I think jumping from even from 2k to 5k was a big change for me. So when you're working with a 2k client, it's smaller amount of tasks to manage. So you say 2 pieces of content, 5 pieces of content, some calls and some reporting, it's fairly easy to manage. When you start working in the kind of 10k 15k mark, project management becomes a real big issue, because you've got a lot of moving parts. And especially with me, like, I didn't delegate anything. So I was managing all of the emails, I was responding to all of the Slacks. I was using like 3 or 4 different project management softwares at any one time. And you soon let things slip through the cracks. And that obviously creates friction with clients, which you want to avoid at all costs. So the way that I started to handle it was less about tasks and deliverables and box checking, and more so, let's spend a couple of hours per week with the client, understanding what I've got to get done, prioritize shit from, like, you know, this piece of content needs to be refreshed versus let's rebuild an entire blog. We'll focus on that, and we'll flip the priorities and have like 2 things at any one time, maybe manage it for like 2 weeks at a time. So we, hey, here's a sprint. We're going to do all of the work in this sprint. We'll recap at the end, and then we'll move on to the next thing.
Interesting. And what were the kind of softwares that you were using? You mentioned you were using 4 different softwares. Was there some that were garbage, or anything you can recommend for people maybe in that current situation?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. If you manage multiple emails and multiple like workspaces, use Shift. It's like $120 a year, but like everything is now in one screen for me. For project management, the best one I've used so far is Basecamp. I've used Monday, I've used Asana, I've used Jira, and I've used ClickUp. And Basecamp is the most intuitive, and it's also like super easy drag and drop. That's the best way, for sure, for me anyway.
So as you've got past the 2 to 5 grand stage, and you've sorted out your kind of software and stuff like that, again, you know, going from 5 to 10, there's more headaches, you need more hands, and obviously potentially outsourcing bits of work or using remote workers, whatever you want to call that. What were the kind of things that you first struggled with, and how did you free up your time? Because obviously we all know money cannot buy time, and we need to make sure that we've got enough time to run our businesses. So what did you delegate first and foremost? In 2 seconds, I had to turn my alarm off.
It's the fire alarm for all the weed.
I wish.
To free up, I'll be completely honest. I didn't start freeing up my own time until about 13, like maybe a year into my consultancy, because, it's quite common knowledge. I'm not that trustworthy. Like, I don't trust people that often to do things for me, because I've been burned by either outsourced remote workers that have either done a really poor job, or content writers that have done a poor job, or I've always kind of had this thing of like, if they can't do it as good as me, then I don't want to work with them, which is a bullshit mentality, because I don't know how good I am. I just think I'm good at stuff. So I had to really learn. And like you said, Holly, particularly, like, my real area of specialism is content growth and content planning and content strategy. So I helped Holly develop similar skills to me. And once she was able to do things like content briefs, content editorial calendars, and content strategies, like, my time, all of a sudden I had like 3 hours, 4 hours back a day, which made a huge difference.
And obviously, when you get that 3 or 4 hours back a day, what are you doing with that time? Because obviously you're going on then on to further scale, but what were you doing with that extra time to go from, say, 10 to 15 or 20 or whatever the jump was?
A lot of my focus is personal brand. So I spend a ton of time just kind of figuring out what works, engaging with different networks, different audiences, different people that I wanted to eventually work with. I think if you get 3 hours back a day for your business, you should spend it networking. You should spend it building your personal brand. Or if you have an agency, figuring out ways how you can kind of improve your company's or your agency's brand and positioning. That will make a huge difference to how you go from 10K to 20K, just by how you position yourself in the market. And it took me 12 months to get to a point where I understood what my place in the market was, where I could start charging better rates. I could start working and picking and choosing who I want to work with. But if I didn't have that time, I wouldn't have started to work with the types of clients that I do now.
So here is an awkward question. What is your place in the market? What do you feel your place in the market is?
So my place, I've niched myself down. I've niched myself down to a particular industry. And within those industries, I specialize in content growth. That's all I pitch. I don't say I'm a link builder. I don't say I'm a tech SEO. I say, if you have a company of this size spending this amount of money, content growth is going to be your quickest wins. And that's where I've got my biggest results. So I stick with it.
I think it's important that you do that, because I think we can look at all the kind of SEOs out there, and everyone's got their kind of weird angle, like the audit guy or the link building guy or whatever it may be, the internal linking guy. There's so many of them, so you can kind of niche down within SEO. And I was just curious, because different from me, when I started out all the years ago, you had to become good at everything, or try and learn as much as you could about everything, because it was more of an all-rounded SEO. But probably in the last 5-10 years, people have really niched down into very specific topics, and it's just interesting to hear that is the route you're going down, and obviously you're having success with it, which is what we all want to do. I do think, and I'm not suggesting anyone in the mastermind or anything is doing it, but I think sometimes trying to just say you're another SEO can be extremely difficult, because there's millions of SEOs out there. What is your unique selling point? Why should someone use you over the next guy? And I think sometimes that is really important. It's where you position yourself, how you brand yourself, and all these kind of things do make people then want you for that particular thing. And obviously, that's all you need. You don't need to do everything. You know, I like link building. I've always been a link builder, but you know, I certainly wouldn't be the guy to go to for any kind of crazy in-depth technical stuff. You know, I've definitely got weak areas as well. So it's an interesting angle. Now, yeah. If you were to start again and put yourself back to, let's say, September 2019, you're sat in the agency, you then get the opportunity to come to Amsterdam, you then went home, would you have done anything different from the way you'd done it? Would you have done things quicker? Would you have changed anything? Just out of curiosity, going back, was there, like, obviously you took, let's say, January till September to get out of the agency, which is 9 months. Mm-hmm. Are you kicking yourself, like, why didn't I do that in the February or the March? Or do you think, you know, just mentally you had to get your head right before you jump, just for other people that are in that situation?
I think, yeah, my biggest regret would be I didn't do it quick enough. I definitely had always wanted to, like, I didn't quite know what I wanted to do for myself. And it took a long time for me to figure that out. Kind of couple that with the fact that when you're in an agency or any kind of job and you're kind of in the thick of it day in, day out, it you often don't find the time or the headspace to figure it out and say, right, now's the time, I'm ready. I was in a position where I was kind of two things. I was attracted to the lifestyle that I saw when I met up with you guys in Amsterdam. And I was like, you know, I want to do that. And it's real. And it's real. And secondly, I was in a position in an agency where I had lost all passion for it. That maybe had happened 6 months prior. I started to switch off. I stopped, you know, enjoying the things I was doing. So it was then I was in such a bad, like, mindset that I couldn't leave because I was just always pissed off. And then seeing you guys kind of gave me that kick up the ass to say, look, this is a real thing. You've got the skill set, like, make it happen. What's the worst that can happen? You go back and get another job. That's it. Yeah.
It's there is always that, just very simple. Just if it fails, go back and get another job. But again, I know the feeling that you would have because I've been there, leaving a day job, jumping into doing my own thing. And, you know, you've got money concerns and you know, what if, self-doubt and all that stuff. But one thing you cleverly said was you see the lifestyle that other people have, you know, other people just doing things and traveling and working, you know, the laptop lifestyle or the nomad or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think it's bullshit. And I think in particular, there was someone, I'm not going to name names or anything, but were like, yeah, these guys are all bullshitters. They don't make what they claim. They're driving about in rental cars and all of this kind of stuff. But genuinely, you've been there hearing that shit and then you've seen other people over here doing this stuff. So I'd just love to know your feedback on, you know, do you ever look back and go, fuck, these agency guys just think the wrong way? Like, it's just such a shitty thing to think that there isn't more money out there. Because obviously you're now doing well for yourself and you've got a few quid. I know you still haven't bought yourself any nice clothes, but you know, you're doing well for yourself. And
yeah,
is it all bullshit or, you know, or is it not?
No, it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the nomad lifestyle and the laptop lifestyle, like you said, is, I think the history of it is very much like, you know, we're trying to sell something, we're selling a dream that doesn't actually exist. And when you're in an agency, or at least, you know, this is my own personal experience, it's definitely that this isn't real kind of thinking is perpetuated by who you're surrounded by. You know, they're like, nah, these guys are just, you know, they're selling snake oil. These guys aren't real, like you said. And I've always been in the opinion of I'll give stuff a chance, right? So if there is an opportunity to kind of prove or disprove something, I will take it. And that's really why I reached out to you, because I saw you at Brighton. I saw you were a real person. I was a bit afraid to come and speak to you. Like, I was like, this guy's a celebrity, so I'm going to stay well away. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to message him. You're a real person. Then we met in Amsterdam. I saw that everything you were talking about was legitimate. Other guys were doing it. And yeah, it's not bullshit. So for people who are in that mindset of second guessing whether or not this is a fad or a scam, I would say find out yourself rather than letting other people skew your judgment and then make the kind of call on it.
Yeah, because it does, you know, people making money online, even now, whether it's, you know, my own websites or whatever, I still pinch myself going, I can't believe I'm making money from, like, I'm not digging up a road or doing some kind of crazy manual labor. So I, you know, sometimes myself, I even pinch myself going, I can't fucking believe it. But yeah. So I get why people would maybe think like that. But again, you know, you hear people saying things and, you know, saying all this kind of stuff and this, that, and the next thing. And it's just amazing because I also had that as well, where I'm looking, running the agency, working with the low level clients going, man, I'd love to be, you know, Matthew Woodward, you know, traveling the world, earning all this money from affiliate. And again, I'm one of those guys like you who has to give it a go. Even if it did, if it did fall flat in my face, at least I gave it a go. There real money out there to be made from affiliate? And you know, having that kind of, because what used to annoy me about Matthew was he was traveling the world doing his blogging and showing you him, you know, seeing amazing places and, you know, spear fishing and doing all sorts of mad stuff. And you're just like, fuck, you know, I'm arguing with clients all day. Yeah. So I think you've always got to look and go, is there something else out there that I could be doing with these skills and make an easier living? So again, I totally get why people would say it, but I just wanted to emphasize to anyone out there, you know, it's not all pie in the sky. You can make a business and you can turn this not just to what Ryan's done, you know, working with clients, but you know, you could essentially just set up your own lead gen business or whatever it might be. There's so many opportunities with the digital marketing skills. I want to talk a bit about delegation, because again, as a agency owner and all that kind of stuff, you know, I didn't trust a lot of people, didn't even trust my own staff. I wanted to be hands-on with everything. But I wanted to, you know, try and make my life easier and stuff. But it was hard because you don't trust people to do the job as good as yourself. Have you delegated anything yet? And now you obviously have, you said like it took you a year to do it, but what were those things that you did eventually say, fuck it, I'm going to have to let go here and I'm just going to have to you know, go with a bit of faith that I'm getting something that you know, is potentially not going to be what I think it should be? What were those things?
I think there's kind of three things that I'll bucket. So content being one of them, finding a good content writer, you know, I think we've all seen it. If you find one that's good and reasonably priced, hold on to them for dear life and tell nobody about them. So I started in the early days, and this is how mad it was. I was writing the content to get it produced for people because I'm a fairly competent writer. That was my first client. I was writing all of their content, and then it got to a point where I couldn't do it anymore, and it very quickly, once I jumped to that 5K mark, became apparent I couldn't do it. So I delegated content super early on. Link building is a very on and off kind of thing for me, in the sense of like I've bought bad links that have upset clients that have put me off continuing to buy links. So I kind of done manual outreach and use things like Buzzstream or tried to use Pitchbox a few times, Harrow, and it's not that scalable. So even doing that, it's not scalable. So as of about the year point, I was like, fuck this, I can't keep doing this. So I started to delegate out links, and it's been pretty good. I found a good vendor, some good lists. So I'm pretty confident in that. And then, like I said, you know, some of the smaller tasks, you know, content planning, briefs, strategy, that kind of thing is still delegated out. The thing that eats my time the most now and has always is when you are a freelancer, you're selling yourself, not an agency. So they think that, you know, every call you have to be on it, every Slack message, it's you, every email, it's you. So if you are building a personal brand, if you are going to become a freelancer, just remember that if you do delegate out these kind of smaller tasks, it's still not going to detract from the fact that you are the brand and clients are going to expect to be able to deal with you directly.
Yeah. Randy Rodé has just stuck in the chat. What vendor are you using for your links? Are you willing to share that information?
Absolutely not.
Worth a try.
Linksforyou.com.
Linksforyou.com, Randy. But it's one of those things, like you say, whether it's a content writer or anything, don't share that shit, because like I've said many times before, if someone finds something good, a loophole, a vendor or whatever, and there's a little door there where you walk through and buy your shit, like, they all pile in, man.
Yep.
They all pile in and fuck it all up for everyone. And it's hilarious to watch it happen, because I've done it so many times. Oh, dude, you know, I can get you there, this or that or whatever. And like, literally your inbox gets flooded. Give me this, give me that. Bang, bang. And there's like hundreds of these people, yep, all wolfing it all up like animals. I'm not going to name names again, but I had dropped the name of a person into the mastermind, and the name of a person who does Harrow. And then someone else is like, so-and-so is wanting to know who the Harrow person is. I'm like, you can't tell that fucking person, because they actually hire full-time and fuck it all up for us all. So you have to be careful what you share out there, because I know, and I have done it, I've stolen people from other people, hired them full-time myself. So that's what goes on, and it ruins it for everyone. Just if you're ever freelance, finding a couple of good vendors, don't be naive. Do not be naive, because your pants will literally be pulled down, which is probably not the right analogy, but that's the one I'm going to use. it's a shark world, but obviously you're doing well, making your money and all that stuff, and you're doing a bit of PR on Business Insider, promoting yourself. You know, people are becoming, you know, they know who you are. You're getting a voice in the industry and all that stuff. But what are the kind of longer term plans? So 2 years in, you're making good money, you've scaled up, and you know, great to see that. But you're still an impression millionaire, as I called you once. You know, you always want to earn more money, invest in other opportunities. How do you go from, let's say, 40k a month was what was mentioned in the Business Insider. 40k a month is 500 grand a year. Now, mm-hmm, great money, great success, but what do you do next, like, to make money? Because you cannot probably go to 80 grand a month doing what you do. You know, I'm going to reword this question. Are you at your capacity at 40k a month? Is there a figure in your head where you think, I just physically cannot go past this figure? And you know, with the current structure that I've got, and you know, to get scale in terms of your bank balance, what are you looking at? Is it affiliate, e-com, not like something completely nothing to do with SEO? Just curious.
Yeah, I think I'm comfortably at my capacity now. Like, if I was to try and squeeze an extra 10-20k out of this per month, I'd be running myself into the ground. I think I could scale it, because I've got, you know, reliable resources beneath me to get to a certain point. But again, the time strain comes on when people want to jump on calls, and you've got management and reporting to get done. And ultimately, I sit at the top of the strategy. So managing that for, you know, 80K worth of clients per month is a ton of work. So I think I'm at my capacity right now for client work, but my kind of longer term goals are, To be able to reach 100k a month revenue, that's my kind of long-term goal. And I'd like to do it on my own terms. So through affiliate or a content site, those would be my first go-to choices. And I have a super keen interest in e-com. So building a brand up, trying to, you know, scale it to a certain point and then selling it. But yeah, that would be the dream, to be able to sell a business, exit a business for like, you know, 8-9 figures and sail off into the sunset with pina coladas in every corner, wearing flip-flops all day, every day. Like, that would be the dream.
But you don't even drink.
Mate, I love a pina colada.
Pina colada.
Yeah.
Mate, next time we're out, pina coladas all day round, all day long.
Yeah,
Andreas has got a question here. How do you structure your pricing or your projects? You mentioned that you do sprints and you know, stuff like that. But he's asking, do you do a monthly retainer indefinitely, or do you do this sprint thing where you're charging a lump sum and going hard at certain things? Do you fix pricing for that, or do you have to customize it?
Yeah, so everything is tailored, depending on the niche, depending on their kind of growth goals. That will kind of allow me to figure out how much it's going to take based on what their kind of internal goals are for revenue, growth, traffic, whatever it might be. I've always protected myself and said, I'd never work on a kind of an hourly rate unless I do like a consultancy call, which is totally different. But if I'm working with a client, it will be, the project is going to do, it's going to take X amount of time, whether that's 6 months or 12 months. And the project cost every single month is going to be this. And within this cost, you're going to get X, Y, Z. But I won't tell them if 30 hours is for content writing or $3,000 is for links. Like, I will say, here's what success looks like. Here's how much it's going to cost you to achieve that success. And, you know, you've come to me for a reason. So do you trust me enough to go and do that?
Interesting. And another question, I think it's from Andreas as well. How many hours a day do you actually do work?
It's changed as of recent. I would say for the first year, I was pulling sort of 14-hour days, 16-hour days to get everything done. Now I just work a normal 9-to-5, I guess, hourly, but it's flexible. Like, sometimes I'll jump on at 7 a.m. and I'll get off at 1, 2, whatever. I would say on average, I do 6-7 hours a day. Straight hard work, none of this like dilly-dallying around. I will get in, get shit done, and get off.
In that little room that you've got set up for yourself there.
Yeah.
So just out of curiosity, quickly, in your setup, that's not your bedroom, it's not your living room, that's a dedicated office where you sit down and do your shit.
Yep.
I think that's massively important. You know, some people are lying in their beds doing their work and sitting on the couch watching stuff.
It doesn't create like separation between your home life, and it's like super distracting. I can't watch TV. I have TV on in the background when I'm working because it will take my attention away. And I couldn't work in the sitting room or in the kitchen or wherever for like 5 hours, because I would just, like, the snacks are right there or the TV's right there. So I would be in and out.
Yeah, fuck that. Chris Giles has just said in the chat, monthly retainer plus revenue share to scale. Is that anything you've ever dabbled in or considered, or do you steer clear of it for any particular reason?
I hadn't touched revenue share before, but it's funny because I've got a potential e-com client that I'm considering doing it with because of the value of the item and the potential for growth. Like, I know it's going to be a super quick win. The only issue with revenue share is protecting yourself in all events. So if you do achieve X growth and they say, well, I don't care, I'm not paying you this percentage, or the growth isn't achieved, so they don't want to pay you anything, it's being able to make sure that you're protected, like, legally against that.
Yeah. Another question from Andreas. How do you make sure your time is not wasted when doing proposals and estimates?
One easy, simple solution is that I will not do them. So I have stopped doing proposals for clients or potential clients. I will do a Loom video, 15-minute, 20-minute Loom video, explain how I'm going to do things, walk them through hrefs, show them some potential opportunities. If you get quick at Excel and good at Excel, you can show some forecasts. There are a couple of sheets out there to help you do that. But I will not spend 5 hours, 6 hours producing a proposal for somebody to say, thank you, you've just given me everything I needed to know. I'm going to go and do it somewhere else cheaper.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And so I think a lot of people out there do that, and you're pulling all this stuff together, which is complete madness. I like the Loom video idea. I like, you know, doing a lot of videos and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah. I had, it was good. Like I had one for, you know, Gary V.
Yeah.
So I did a proposal for his, one of his websites, and I just did a Loom video, 25 minutes. I walked him through everything, and like the value they got out of that was a lot more than if I just pitched them a deck. So if you have Loom and you're comfortable talking on camera, or, you know, you've got a decent setup, I would just Loom them. It saves you a ton of time. It's probably easier for you to explain stuff as well.
Exactly. It takes you 3 hours to write down, you know, a sophisticated email. Probably take you 10 minutes to rattle it out your mouth. Yeah. So, definitely like that one. Now, going forward, before we do any other kind of questions, just want to know what the future holds. You obviously mentioned you're building a personal brand. Is that going to involve doing the whole speaking thing and podcasts? And is that the kind of route you intend to go down to, again, make money?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm going to continue to invest and build my personal brand as much as I can. Like, as an example, this is not a shameless plug, kind of is, but that Business Insider article, you know, it cost me nothing, just 3 hours of my time to pitch somebody and say, here's what I've been doing. And then a few edits. Like overnight, I've had a phenomenal amount of messages and leads come through. And I think the more I'm able to do that over this next year with podcasts and, you know, just continue. The thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is the worst thing that can happen is someone will say no or just don't respond to you. So if you've got a genuinely cool story and you want it on Forbes or you want it on Business Insider, pitch it and see what happens. Or you want to be on a podcast, pitch it and see what happens. And I plan to do that like heavily this year. Just give it, you know, what have I got to lose? Nothing really. Just someone saying no, a little bit of egg on my face. I walk away. Next one.
But one final thing I want to ask you about your whole personal journey. If you could change any one thing other than, you know, starting early, was there anything you'd done that was like massive egg in your face, something that blew up in your face, like something you'd done, bought, whatever it might be, anything you can share with us where you could potentially help someone else not do that? Because surely you've made a few, or give me the top three mistakes you've made in the past 2 years, because you must have done something, bought something, or followed something that someone said that wasn't completely true, or whatever it might be. Give us a couple of stories.
Yeah. I would say it's really hard not to kind of like, I'm not in any way, shape or form bashing anybody's business when I say this, but I would be in the early stages. I think over the last 14 months, I've probably spent 10 grand, 15 grand, maybe 10 grand on courses and tools. And they all pretty much turn out to be the exact same thing as what you can find online. Like, that's why I think masterminds are so valuable, because you're kind of around people that are given genuine information that they don't want other people to get access to. So that was probably my biggest one. I genuinely thought, and you know this, that there was something out there that I didn't know. like, there's this secret, where's this link shop you've all got the keys to? what's the trick behind SEO? And it's less about the trick, it's understanding the kind of what works and how to scale it and how to do it consistently, and figuring out that as you go along. That's the first thing. And I think the second thing, tripping me up wise, is being too emotionally attached to a client. If you invest yourself too heavily in a client and they pull the plug and you've given them everything or more than you should have, more than what they've been paying you for, and you've kind of sacrificed home life for it, I would do that differently.
Interesting. And that's a true story for anyone who doesn't know it. Ryan, I was explaining what links were and you know, all the different types of links you can get to Ryan. And he's like, dude, come on, show me what the real link shop is. I don't want to go to the kind of shit ass shop that everyone else is going to. Like, I know you guys are doing something different. I'm like, well, not. And again, I've been there, done it, thought people had something on me. That was, you know, they were doing slightly different. So it's just funny to hear that go through other people's minds, like, show me the real shop. But we can take some questions from, we've got 6 minutes. Have you guys got any questions we want to ask? I can cut the recording here. And you can ask away, Ryan, anything like on a personal level. So before I cut the call, Ryan, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you first and foremost?
Craig, it's been an honor, sir, to finally be here with you. And if people want to find me, LinkedIn is the best spot. Ryan Durrani on LinkedIn. Or if you are on Twitter, the handle is search for Ryan. So those are the two places to find me at.
Check him out, guys. The links will be below for that as well. But no, I appreciate it, mate, and thank you very much.
Cheers, Craig. Thank you, mate.